Hi, friends. Fiona's story is unforgettable. It is one thing to know that Black people face a much higher maternal mortality rate. It is another thing to hear someone's story unfold and to really hear the racism and fat phobia that is intertwined and could have led to Fiona's death. This story could absolutely be triggering for our Black community members to listen to. This story is very important for especially birth professionals and for really anyone who feels up to listening and learning about what it can be like to exist in a larger body and a Black body during pregnancy and birth. I am honored that Fiona joined us to share her story, and I hope we can all hold space for her and fight for change. Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hi, friends. Today, we are joined by Fiona Houston. Fiona is the founder of Fat Black Pregnant on Instagram and her website, fatblackmother.co.uk. And she's doing incredible work that I've been following online. And I'm like, Fiona, will you come on my show? So welcome, Fiona. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm super honored. Anytime anybody asks me to do anything, I'm in shock.
Oh,
I'm so happy. I'm really happy to talk to you.
Well, your passion and your voice comes through, and it's just an honor to have this opportunity. And where are you joining us from today?
I'm in very cold London. So the sun did come out. I managed to dry some laundry, but I'm going to have to put it back out again tomorrow because it's too damn cold.
Oh, no.
I'm in my dining room surrounded by movie posters, and I've got my baby monitor because my child's asleep. But for my lovely house.
Oh, well, thank you for joining us all the way from London. That's so neat. And your work really came through the advocacy work that you do for plus size people during pregnancy, but also especially Black people too, came out of your own experience. So I would love to hear your story and your journey and then hear about your passion and what you're doing. So let's start with that little baby on the monitor that will hopefully stay asleep. But if they don't, that's fine too.
She's on silent. So I pretty much know how long I can ignore her for before it's a problem. Before the neighbors start knocking on the door.
No.
Ramona. So my daughter, Ramona, she's 2.5. She is a tyrant, but also an angel. Anyone who has a toddler or has had a toddler knows exactly what I'm talking about. They are the best of times and the worst of times.
Yes.
But actually, I wasn't sure I was ever going to have children. I had a dream when I was 11. This sounds so ridiculous, that I was a grey-haired woman. So I had grey dreadlocks and I was surrounded by a cluster of grandchildren. And it's honestly, I get goosebumps whenever I talk about it. It's one of the happiest dreams or moments I had during that period of my life. And I woke up and went, I need dreadlocks. I have to have dreadlocks because I had this dream and it has to come true.
That's incredible.
And my parents are like, you're 11, you can't have dreadlocks, because I think they're both from the West Indies, and when they were young, people with dreadlocks, it was kind of not a great thing. It was seen very negatively. So when I turned 18, got dreadlocks, and then was like, oh, wait, that means I have to have a kid. I hadn't thought about that. I really hadn't thought about I thought about the grandkids, not the fact that I'd need to have a child. But I've had kind of a very up and down mental health history with depression and anxiety. And I was in a terrible relationship for 5 years. So I was very happy not to have had children with him.
Yeah.
But once I came out of that and was happy, I was a bit like, do you know what? Maybe I don't get to have kids. Maybe I just get to be happy. And that is the least and the most that most people can ever ask
right.
for.
That's wonderful too. To be yes.
Exactly that. And so, of course, as soon as I thought that, I met Jack. As soon as I thought, I'm really happy being super single and 30, I guess I was. I met Jack and became completely obsessed with him. I told him I loved him on our third date. I was completely obsessed. And we got pregnant and I lost the baby. So I lost the first baby.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. 10, 11 weeks. And it actually, we got pregnant the first time on accident. And also everyone had told me fat people can't get pregnant very easily. And then we got a little bit lackadaisical.
And surprise, guess what? People of all sizes can get pregnant.
Who knew?
Right.
So yeah, we lost the first one and that definitely made us feel like, no, we definitely want this. The first one was an accident, but no, we want this. We want to be parents. Yeah. And I got pregnant, I think 5 weeks later.
Wow.
So it was super easy. I know I'm really blessed for that to have been our journey. But then while I was pregnant, as I said, I have a history of difficult mental health issues up and down. And it's in my family. So my mother has really struggled her whole life. Mm-hmm. And so being pregnant, I was very aware that potentially I could start having negative thoughts about my body again.
Yeah.
And obviously the toll it can take on your mental health. So mm-hmm. I'm a worrier. So I was really worried about my anxiety. And so what I really wanted was to be able to come online or buy a magazine or talk to someone about that and to feel seen and to feel like I'm not the only one worried about this stuff.
Yeah.
Other people who are just like me are going through the same thing. And I could not find it. I couldn't find a magazine with someone who looked like me on it. Someone who was, God, how old was I? 37, I think, when I was pregnant. So I was 37. Everyone kept calling me a geriatric mum.
Yeah.
when you first get seen by a midwife after you tell the doctor you're pregnant, she weighed me and then was like, oh, no, do that again. Like in complete shock at my weight.
Oh my goodness.
Honestly. And then they figured out my BMI and were like, oh my goodness, you're so fat type thing. You have to immediately go onto this different midwifery track of weight loss. And I was like, okay, number one, I lost a baby 2 months ago. You could be nicer to me. This is a lot right now. And, but then it also makes you think, am I being really selfish by getting pregnant? Am I destined to have a baby that's ill or a really rough pregnancy? Am I putting my own life at risk? Like, what is happening? But very much trusted myself and was like, no, this feels so right. It feels so good to be pregnant and to have this I'll call her a thing.
Well, I mean, toddlers can sometimes be things. So I feel you there.
100%. It's like I knew what was coming and was like, you can call her a thing. She deserves it.
But you knew in your heart that this was your baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just kind of felt like no matter what, this is the right thing to do. Mm. And somehow I was able to not let that get me down. Yeah. And I say somehow, Jack, my husband is exceptional. So he was wonderful. My parents are incredible, but they are warriors. So it's kind of like, I'm not really going to talk to you about that stuff, don't you? I'm just going to tell you everything's brilliant and then talk to Jack and cry.
Aww.
But yeah, I started, like I said, going online and looking up for magazines just for, older mums, fat mums, black mums, all three, combination of any of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, for all of the sins of the internet, one of the great things is if you look hard enough, you'll find at least one person like
you. Yes.
But so often, the articles I was finding, there was always a negative slant. Mm-hmm. It was always the bad things that could happen, or even if it was trying to be supportive, it still was rooted in a negative belief. So it was just kind of like, I get it. I can see you're trying, but I'm not getting, you know, if I were to buy a magazine, it's all full of very thin, happy women, and every story is rooted in a happy fact.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just kind of like, so then where's that carefree mum magazine for people like me. This is crazy.
Yeah.
I don't want to feel miserable.
No.
I don't want to spend the next however many months being scared. That's abysmal. No one should have to do that.
I'm curious, within the system that you're in the UK, the National Health Services, the NHS, mm-hmm. when you were transferred based on your BMI to a different set of care with other midwives, were you treated more compassionately under that system, or still made to feel kind of like that ticking time bomb that we hear a lot of stories from plus size people being made to feel like, oh, it's just a matter of time until you develop gestational diabetes. How were you made to feel by that care?
So the irony of it is that they just didn't bother to put me on that track.
Oh, after they made you feel all those things.
Wonderful. Just wonderful. And I'd have checkups. Or, you know, I'd see the consultant. And actually, I lost weight during my pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
But no one seemed to pay attention to that. Not for any bad reason. I guess there was a baby and I stopped drinking.
Yeah, no, totally. If we make some changes to our habits, weight loss can be a byproduct, but it should never be the focus. But yeah, weight loss happens. I lost weight during pregnancy, but it's not something we should be like, oh, lose weight. It's not the time. But it can be a byproduct. That. Yeah, just like and gaining weight can be a byproduct of pregnancy. Yeah.
Exactly that. And that is what freaked me out. I was like, why are you so concerned about this? I'm growing a person.
Yes.
don't worry about anything else. But yeah, and consultants were like, oh, yes, you know, you need to make sure you don't put on any weight. Don't put on any weight. But it didn't feel like judgment. It felt like a medical warning.
Wow.
So that's why you get a little bit caught. You're like, oh, crap, should I worry about this? What is going on? So then I was calling this midwifery for fat people service. And they just never answered the phone.
Oh.
And then when they did answer the phone, they were like, oh yeah, someone will be in touch. I'm like, okay, cool, but you know, I'm 5 months pregnant now.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm gonna have a baby by the time someone gives me a call back.
No one ever called me back.
Wow.
Nobody ever. And I can't even blame the pandemic, because this was 2019. So it was way before.
Yeah.
It was just a nonsense. But in terms of how we were treated, 100%, our consultant was so nice, but absolutely terrified the life out of my husband in a way that I had not realized until I was in surgery. So I opted for a vaginal birth, but there were so many interferences when I actually went into hospital that I ended up needing an emergency C-section, which, I mean, by that point, I was like, I don't care. This child has to come out of me.
Yes.
It had been like, oh God, 30-something hours since my water had broken. I was like, I just want it done now, please.
Of course.
But I was in the surgery and they wanted Jack to leave. So they took Ramona out and she turned around and looked at me when she heard my voice and all sorts. Like, I remember that. Aww. But they gave me so many drugs over such a long period that I was going in and out. But it felt like I just wanted to go to sleep. I just felt very tired.
Yeah.
And the staff were like, or the surgeons, I guess, were like, Jack, here's your baby. Go outside. And he was like, no, I'm not leaving. I will not leave her here. And I was like, I just need to go to sleep. And he was like, you can't sleep. Don't sleep. And I just remember being like, you have a baby in your hands. You have to leave. And he wouldn't leave. And it wasn't until I spoke to him after. Actually, I think it was only about 2 months ago. We talked about this. And he said that he genuinely feels like he has some kind of, I don't want to say PTSD, but he still very much feels it, because for 9 months, they said, do not have a C-section. You are too fat. It is very dangerous. You must have a vaginal birth. You must. And I was like, whatever. I don't care. Like, I wasn't listening, but Jack really was. So then when I was in surgery, having the thing that they told us for nearly a year, I'm too fat to have. And then I was going in and now, apparently I crashed. I don't remember that. Apparently my blood pressure crashed. And I do know that my uterus didn't contract. It took a long time. Because I remember I was lying on the table and someone going, oh, it's flabby. Oh. I was like, thanks. Thank you very much. But yeah, so yeah, it was, there were things that happened. There were so many different things that happened.
So he didn't want to leave because he thought he might lose you.
Yeah.
That is trauma. That 100%. Is PTSD. Yeah. Like if he can get some help, mental health help around that. I mean, to see the person you love the most and oh my gosh, my heart is breaking, but I'm so glad that he was able to express those feelings to you and what he went through. Yeah. And I mean, that's huge.
Long time. I think for him, it took him a long time to tell me.
Yeah.
Because he thought, well, you went through it. I only witnessed it.
Mm.
I'm like, come on. Come on. Like, it's when you love someone that much, like, I hate the idea of anything happening to him. I would much rather it happen to me. Mm. 100%. So I completely understand what he was. And I remember when they wheeled me back out of surgery, I can see him. He was sat there in the hat they make you wear, like, to protect, like, to stop hair falling everywhere, with a newborn in his hands, and he was just looking so lost. He looked up at me and I thought, it looks like he's holding a loaf of bread. Like, he's got his daughter in his hand, but I don't think he could even engage with her until I came out.
Until he knew you were okay.
Until he knew I was okay.
Wow. You know, we talk so often about what we experience as plus size people going through pregnancy, but we don't as much talk about what our partners experience. Yeah. And that is such a powerful and heart-wrenching story that they had made him feel like if you had the cesarean birth, you very likely wouldn't come out of it.
Yeah, or one of you's probably not going to come out of it type thing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I think I got numbed to it because, you know, most fat people, especially fat women, if you've been fat essentially your whole life, especially going through those teen years, no one is meaner to you than you are to yourself on the inside, right? You say just the most disgusting things to yourself to the point where sometimes it's like people on the outside can't compare to what you can do to yourself. Mm-hmm. So I think I went into it and I was annoyed that people were talking to me in that way, but it ranked maybe 2 out of 10 in comparison to what I've said to myself before in the past. So I think some of it could roll off my back a little bit, but not for my husband, not for Jack, not at all. It really stung him really badly. And I think I just got more angry than hurt.
Yeah.
So trying to get scans done and they write on forms, can't see baby properly because of body habitus, which basically means because you're fat. And it's a bit like, I guess that lots and lots of people are fat. And lots of people need ultrasounds. I feel like just going, you're too fat for an ultrasound, isn't a thing.
Right.
That's not an answer to anything.
No. Like, and we've actually interviewed an ultrasound technician on the show to really talk through that, and that there's a lot that they can do to help people get into different positions. And while it can be harder for the ultrasound waves to go through adipose tissue, it doesn't mean that it's always much more difficult. It often means that just more training needs to be involved. Yes. And, you know, let's look at the technology as well. And
That's exactly my point. And I think, you know, with Mona, towards the end, they kept saying, oh, she's going to be huge. Like, she's just going to be this giant beast baby. And
did they use those words?
No.
Okay. Oh, I'm going to fall on the floor. But that's how you were made to feel. And that's what 100%.
Matters. 100%. Wow. 100%. They absolutely made me feel like, I was going to birth Godzilla or something.
Oh. And,
but they couldn't measure her properly. So I know, I can't remember how they meant to measure, but she ended up using this more old school way of doing it while she was in my stomach towards the end.
With the measuring tape on the outside of the belly. So the fundal, the fundal height measuring.
That thing.
Which when we exist in a larger body, we go into pregnancy with a belly. So we're going to measure
ahead, but that's just, we have our own curvature, right? And our own numbers. Yeah. And what your midwife should be looking for is just continuous growth, right? And not some big rapid growth, or, you know, they're looking for your own curvature, which we will often measure ahead as plus size people, but we're not technically ahead. Like, your baby's not going to be, you know, like what you were being said and scared. Like, you can be measuring, you know, let's say 38 weeks when you're only 34 weeks pregnant. It doesn't mean that you're necessarily having a baby that is currently at 38 weeks in size. So,
exactly that.
But you were made to feel that that was the case, instead of them explaining that you have your own trajectory. And it's just, there's just certain adjustments that need to be made to meet us where we're at.
And that's the frustration for me. It just feels like no one wants to make those adjustments.
Right.
But actually, do you know, they've been making so many, just tens of thousands of women, I'm sure, happier and feel safer.
Yes.
And therefore probably have much smoother birth.
Mm.
You can't really pump me full of fear for 9 months and then go, now go on.
Yes. Now push this baby out of your vagina. We have to feel safe and secure. I mean, this is all hormonal too. Like, there's a lot that has to happen. Like, oxytocin is the love hormone, and that has to be coursing through our veins to birth our babies and to progress through labor and to be in a state of fear or fight or flight. It's nearly impossible to progress.
Exactly that. And I think we did get to 9 centimeters dilated, but to be fair, the shape of Ramona's head when she was born, I think that was like, she just probably just got stuck a little bit and couldn't come out. But, and in terms of treatment with my weight, once Ramona was born is actually when I felt the worst. Ramona was born on the day lockdown here started.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. And I went into hospital on the Friday because my mum was like, your hand is a little bit swollen. I was like, well, it's nothing. She went, no, go to the hospital. So I went to the hospital and they were like, well, you're fine, but you're here now. And it was 4 days before my due date. So they were like, boy, do you want to just stay? And I was like, why not? Why not? I'll just stay. So I went in on the Friday. I had missed the government's announcement of a lockdown. I did not know any of this was happening.
Oh my goodness.
So then on Monday morning, she still wasn't here, even though my waters broke Sunday morning.
Had Jack been with you the whole time?
Jack was with me the Friday, went home the Saturday, came back the Sunday, and then I think he went home and came back Monday morning. So, but the government handled it so badly over here that, nobody really knew what was going on. The staff in the hospital clearly didn't know, should people be here? Should we just chuck everyone out? What do we do?
Wow.
But I had no idea. So really, it wasn't until Ramona was born and we went back to like the high risk ward that I realized something was going on.
Wow.
I had no idea. And then it was very much, well, your parents can't come. And all of that stuff. And I was like, okay, well, this sucks, but fine, whatever, fine. Then they kicked Jack out.
I was worried about that. That's why I asked, because we saw that happen here in the States a lot, where partners were not allowed in.
So what he did was he pretended to leave and then he came back and slept on the floor.
I love Jack so much, so much.
He came back and slept on the floor. And then I think they kicked him out at like 7 in the morning. The next morning.
Jack's amazing.
But the rules kept changing. So and then they were like, oh no, he can come back. And then he came back and then they were like, no, what are you doing here? After half an hour, so he had to go again. Like, it was just insane. But I got very sick after Ramona was born. So I did not know I was sick. Nobody told me I was sick. So Ramona was born on the Monday. I don't think anyone told me I was sick till the Wednesday. And I was told because someone shouted it at me. So it was just, I'm putting half of it down to fear. I think everyone was like, what is this weird disease?
Yeah.
Does everyone have it? Is it going to kill me? Like, I'm sure there was fear there, especially frontline workers.
Oh, yeah.
Who were completely unsupported by our terrible government. But I remember looking at my legs and being like, these are huge. And like, I'm a big girl, but this isn't what my legs are supposed to look like. And I remember showing at least two people saying, this isn't right. This isn't what my body looks like. This isn't right. And I think I literally had to say to someone, I know I'm fat, but I'm not this fat. This is not what my legs look like. And I see pictures of myself before Ramona was born. I'm huge, but in a way that doesn't look right. And I'm like, why? My legs were so swollen and my face was huge. And it's just like, I puffed up, which is a very clear sign of preeclampsia.
Yes. Like,
but no one told me. So the Wednesday, and it wasn't diagnosed at all, not by anybody. And I was being monitored in hospital from the Friday.
I'm like, your blood pressure is being taken. Why are they not? Oh my gosh.
And I know sometimes people assume my blood pressure is higher and it's fine because I'm black and because I'm overweight.
Yeah.
But really, I mean, I hit some really scary numbers when I was in hospital. But no one seemed to panic until someone came to shout at me, you've got preeclampsia and sepsis and organ failure. Why don't you want to go home? Or why don't you want to get better? And I was like, I have what? I have what?
Fiona and I are on video together and my mouth is just like, I'm sorry, did you just say sepsis and organ failure?
Yeah.
And
failure. No one told me. Literally, I was sat in the bed with my kid, like, what is going on? Yeah, I had to have a blood transfusion and go on really strong antibiotics and all sorts. But it was just insane. It was insane. So the medical staff were really rubbish. Just the care was terrible. And then, like, the support staff, so I guess the catering and cleaning staff, I went to the toilet. Heaven forbid I go to the toilet when there's no one there to look after my child. But she was asleep. And the toilet was like 5 feet from the bed.
Yes. Yeah.
So and I needed the loo. I don't know why I'm making excuses.
You don't need to make excuses for having to go pee.
So I went to the toilet and I came out and someone said, and Ramona obviously started crying because of course, because life. And someone said, is that your baby? And I was like, yeah. And I'm like, well, go feed her now. She's crying. And you're like, are you drunk? Why are you talking to me like this?
Yeah.
And another woman came behind the curtain as I was getting my breast out to feed Ramona. Bear in mind, I'd just had surgery 3 days before and no one would help me. So, you know, you're not supposed to move things or lift things. No one would help me. But I had to pull Ramona's bed to myself. I had to lift her myself and everything myself. And Jack wasn't allowed to come. But so I was getting ready to feed Ramona and it took a very long time. And this woman came in and was like, is that your baby? And I was like, yes, that's my baby. And they're like, oh, I saw her when you weren't here. And I just thought, wow, she's so big. The mother must be big. And I was right.
Oh my gosh, what is wrong with people?
Yeah. Like Ramona was 3.7 kilos. Ramona was not a big baby. That's like 8 pounds or something. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know the conversion. But like, and even if she was a huge baby,
right? Who says stuff like that out loud? Oh my gosh. Yeah. Are you plus size and pregnant or trying to conceive? Do you wonder where you can find cute plus-size maternity clothes or when you'll start showing and how to embrace your pregnant body? What about having a healthy pregnancy and how to reduce your increased risk? Find the answers to these questions and so much more within the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide and audiobook. From nutrition and physical activity to prenatal care expectations and the importance of hiring a size-friendly care provider, you'll not only learn information to help you make informed decisions throughout your pregnancy, but start to develop a new relationship with your body. Download this guide and start using it at any point in your pregnancy. Stop Googling and start feeling empowered today. Use code PLUSMOMMY to get 20% off the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide and audiobook. Can we go back to you, like, almost dying? Because I still can't. wrap my head around that. And it, it especially is heart-wrenching knowing the maternal mortality rates of Black women and babies, and how especially Black women are not listened to in those situations. And we talk on our show about plus size people, and especially people with different marginalizations, right? You're treated bad enough if you're plus size. And then if you're also Black or LGBTQ or any other layer, how the system often fails people. But I've heard so many stories and I've watched documentaries, but I've never been face to face with someone telling me this story. And I'm just, it's heart wrenching and it's infuriating. And it makes me so appreciative of you taking your experience and being like, I'm going to start something and I'm going to talk about it, because this is real. Like, this happened to you, but you were visibly showing signs of severe preeclampsia. No one was talking to you. No one was telling you what to do or that you might need things, and you weren't getting any support. Yes, a global pandemic is breaking out. I realize that. But you were literally sitting there in this bed dying.
Basically.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I am so sorry. I am so sorry.
Yeah, it's hard. I've asked for a review from the hospital.
Yeah.
I do think, again, I'm someone who, I just like to put my head down and get through. So I don't even really think about it when it's happening. It's kind of like, what do I need to get through this? And that's it. That's what I'm concerned about. And then after a while, it's like, well, it's so far away. Don't even worry about it anymore. But I have learned, because I'm terrible at handling stress, apparently, that even if you're not thinking about it, it doesn't mean it's gone anywhere. It's still in me somewhere.
Yes, the trauma
The trauma of it. And for the fact, I mean, I've mentioned it before on my account, and I've got a blog as well, that every single time I sit to write that birth story, I can't do it.
Yeah.
So I can talk about it, but I'm not talking about the whole thing, I guess, in the order that it happened, and really deep diving into everything that happened.
Yeah.
And that's how I write. I write in detail. I like to remember all the moments. I just get stuck.
Yeah.
I just get stuck every time. And that's very not me. That's not like me in any way. So that to me says, you know, there's something you need to do. Because it's very much easier to think about all the great things that happened, you know, as in my child and watching her grow. And I think because I started my Instagram account for the positives, because obviously I was pregnant when I started it. So it was like, well, I want to see a fat, happy Black woman who's pregnant.
Yes.
Can't find one. I'm going to have to do
it.
And that's literally why I started it. I think my first post, one of my first posts, I think, is a scroll through of I typed in, I don't know, fat and pregnant or just pregnant, and what I found and the images. It could have just been the same woman 100 times in terms of how diverse the images were of people. None of them looked like me. So I started my account, and I think I loved talking about the great side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I thought, up until the birth, well, it's not actually been that bad. So the experience, maybe I'm the exception. And then, the treatment afterwards was just so awful. And I knew women who gave birth the day before and 2 days after me in the exact same hospital.
Yeah.
One of whom was in the ward next to me, like in the bed next to me at one point, who all had amazing experiences. Because I was very much like, maybe it's not a race thing or a weight thing. Maybe I'm just being a crazy person. But then it's like, oh, no, they gave birth literally the exact same time I did almost and had wonderful experiences. And I'm like, okay, well, then there's something.
It's not in your head. It's real.
It's not me. I'm not crazy.
It's very real. And I'm so sorry that the system is still failing people. I mean, it's not how it should be. And I'm so sorry that that's what happened to you. And it makes sense that it's hard to write that story.
Yeah,
did you get all your medical records yet to review?
No. So I think once you request the review, you get all of the information. So yeah. I will have a look at it, because sometimes I'm like, wait, why did that happen?
Right.
Why did this happen? Like, I'm not even really sure. There's even just weird stuff around the anesthetic. So I had an epidural, and it was just like, they looked at me like, oh God, we're going to have to put an epidural on a fat person. Like, you know, that energy came out when they were like, oh, we're going to have to do this. Fine. And it was fine, because of course it was fine. But I just remember thinking, I'm just a pregnant person. Like, I'm not here to cause any trouble. Like, this is what you lot are meant to do. I just don't understand. But then obviously when they had to prep me for surgery, because the epidural, no one told me if you go to sleep, it wears off. So they kept telling me to go to sleep. So then when I woke up, I was like, I'm in pain. But they had to, I think they had to redo it. Oh, it was, anyway, shambles, absolute shambles. Then they had to prepare me for surgery. And I think they injected me with some stuff. And I could feel everything still. No one believed me. So I was like, I can feel you. I can feel what you're doing. And because they do little tests like where they brush your feet or brush your... I was like, yes, I can feel you do that. I can feel you doing that. And there was like this weird spray that's like ice cold, and they were spraying that on me. I'm like, I can feel what you're doing. But they were looking at each other like, no, she can't. And it's like, you're going to cut me open. I promise I won't lie. I promise I'm not going to lie.
Oh my God. I'm not usually one who's speechless, but your story. And even I caught you say before, like, it wasn't that bad, you know, during, but yes. The way you were talked to and treated was not okay throughout this entire pregnancy experience.
Yeah.
That's not right.
Yeah, no, it was pretty rubbish. And I think it's one of those things where when you've never done it before.
Right.
And I have a couple of very close friends with kids, but their experiences were so different to mine. Mm-hmm. They're white and thin, but like one has twins, so that in itself is a whole different journey.
Yeah.
One of my other friends, I don't know what the actual medical term for it. She says she has a weak cervix, so her children are born very early.
Ah, cervical incompetence. We just had a story with someone with that, so right. That might be it. But whatever she has, those were very different trajectory of care than yours, which was a regular pregnancy. you went into pregnancy, well, advanced maternal age, because you were over the age of 35. Yeah. I won't call you geriatric. I'll call you advanced maternal age. And then you had a high BMI. So you had those two things. And those two things do come with increased risks, but you didn't incur those risks during pregnancy. No. Postpartum, I wonder how much of what happened to you was because things weren't caught early.
Yeah. I know that because I'm pretty certain preeclampsia can lead to organ failure, right?
Yes, yes. It leads to HELLP syndrome. Yes.
Well, there you go. So that to me is like, well, then I just feel like I had it this entire time and no one told me. But then why wouldn't they tell me? That doesn't make any sense. And I mean, it's one of those things where you get, even when, so say I hadn't had negative treatment, the fear of being perceived negatively can keep you quiet. So I probably wasn't as loud as I'm not a loud person, but I may not have been as vocal as I maybe normally would have been, because I was very much like, this isn't right. I don't feel right, but I'm in the right place. So they should tell me, I guess, if there's a problem, because they're testing my urine and I'm tied to this machine and, you know, but I never wanted to come across as the angry black woman. I thought if I do that, they're not going to listen to me. So I have to find this balance of being vocal, but also not scaring anybody. Like, it's just completely ridiculous. If I ever have another kid, I will never worry about that.
No.
I absolutely will not worry about that. So yeah. Yeah. Oh,
what you said just a minute ago, all of it, but like the fear of being perceived negatively or the angry black woman kept you quiet. And then you went into organ failure because of that. Wow. Oh yeah. My gosh.
Like I said, you try to say something. Like I said, I looked at my own body and was like, this is not what my body looks
right.
like.
Right. And you know your body.
I know my body. I think someone did say to me, oh, that's just the water settling. That's just water or something. Wait, something
yes,
like that.
We can have retention of water. You were given a lot of yeah. fluids during, yeah. like you sounded like you had a long labor. So you were given yeah. a lot of fluids and then a cesarean birth. But there's a difference between, you know, some excess water. And then there are things that they can do to help you with that. And, you know, going into full blown, you know, sepsis. High preeclampsia that leads to sepsis and organ failure.
Yeah.
It's not okay. I'm wow.
No.
Oh my gosh. How then did this all impact your postpartum immediately? Did it impact your breastfeeding journey?
No. In fact, I produced too much milk.
Yeah.
But because I had absolutely no care afterwards, like none.
Right.
None.
Which you normally I'm normally jealous of what y'all get in the UK postpartum. You get home visits and all this great stuff.
Yeah.
We don't get anything here. We're not seen for 6 weeks until 6 weeks. Yeah, I know, right? But you normally get you get all the goods, but not when the world is just immediately turned upside down.
Well, you say that. There are other women, so we have the NCT group, so it's like you meet a group of women or couples, or single women, whatever, who live near you, and you all learn about what's coming in the month before you have the baby. But they all live quite close to me, so we were each other's lifeline, basically. We have a WhatsApp group, and we're still really close. Our kids go to the same nursery.
I love that!
So that's really great. But talking to them about it, I was like, where's this home visitor? She won't answer my phone calls. And they're all like, oh, we met hours. She's been
around.
Stop
it. Like, they're getting it, but you weren't. Oh, that I'm going to block off this podcast. You are going to make me fly over to London and stir the pot and be like, what is happening?
What is happening? Yeah, no one answered my phone messages. I didn't know what was going on. Someone did call me back eventually. And we did something over the phone. No one ever saw Ramona. And I was a bit like, I said to Chuck, I was like, we could literally keep her in the shed. And no one would know. Not that we wanted to, but I was like, this is ridiculous.
Of course, yeah.
This is ridiculous. We could be horrible people who do terrible things. And no one would know. Because we couldn't register her birth either because of lockdown. So it's like, she could just disappear and no one cares. It was bonkers. It was completely insane. But the point being, no one told me she had a tongue tie. That went undiagnosed.
Oh, wow. And that can really impact nursing. Yeah.
Yes. So, but because my letdown was so strong, she was feeding and growing.
Oh, good, good.
But she had horrible stomach issues and none of us could figure out why. And the internet couldn't tell me. And then it kept saying, it sounds like a tongue tie. It sounds like a tongue tie. But then whenever I tried to speak to someone, they were like, well, no, it can't be because they would have seen it in hospital. It was a tongue tie, ugh, which only got cut last February. So when she was two.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
But then I figured out that maybe my letdown was too strong, which is something I didn't even know was a thing. I didn't know that was possible. So I learned how to let some out first and then feed her. But the first 12 to 14 weeks of that child's life, some of the best and worst of my life. To complete joy in just this beautiful baby, but the pain she was in every night for so long. And I think it makes it worse knowing that had we known, had someone listened and had a look in her mouth and maybe cut it, had I had help from the home visitor about my letdown, there were just things that could have happened that could have reduced her pain for that time. And that I really, that makes me angry. That makes me angrier than everything else.
Yes, as a mother, I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the worst. Absolutely just the worst. But then it just felt like she just came through. Her stomach developed, I guess. And I figured out this bloody thing about my letdown. And then it was all completely smooth sailing until she learned to talk. Basically.
Oh, wow. Oh my goodness. You started your
internet page and your work and the Instagram wanting to be represented and wanting to show positivity. And I absolutely love that. I love in the necessity of the representation. Absolutely. But your story matters so much too. And I wonder how to bridge that, because it shouldn't have happened the way it did for you. And I people need to know this is happening, and it's not your responsibility at all to tell them at all. It's not on you. But it's just interesting that you started it from one standpoint and then you went through so much that was rooted in racism and fat phobia. Yeah. And that's just, that's not okay. That's not okay at all. And I'm so thankful that you're sharing so much with me and with the show, so I can at least in some small part way help to get your story out there. And you were so strong and courageous and amazing. And I wish none of it had happened the way it did for you.
Oh, thank you. I think the good thing about having kind of these opportunities to discuss it and share it is it even, honestly, even now, 2.5 years later, it's still bringing it home for me.
Yeah.
That really this isn't something that I should just accept. And it kind of makes it more real and more concrete. And it's actually really lovely because it works in a way that it's not in any way traumatizing to talk about it. I love to talk. I love to share. I'm a storyteller at my core. I truly love to do this. But it is making me feel stronger in confronting it. And then hopefully more empowered to share it in a different way and in more ways and as far and as wide as I can without worrying, oh God, you just sound like you're whining. It's like, no, not really, Fiona.
No.
You're not complaining.
No.
Yeah. I want to be an advocate for change in my whatever tiny way that I can.
Oh, you are. You are. I mean, I can imagine how many people listening right now just can walk away knowing you felt like you had to be quieter and complacent. And because of that, you got really sick. And knowing that we need to use our voice and stand up and demand help and support, and that we know our bodies when something's wrong better than anyone else. I mean, just by sharing that, you've probably saved someone's life. So,
I hope so. I've always said I just want to do something. Sometimes I post on Instagram or I write a blog and I'm like, who cares? Why would anyone care? But sometimes I'll get a message like from one person who just says, oh my God, this really made my day. Yeah. Or this made me smile today. And I'm like, ah, there you go. That's why.
Yes.
That's why. Or someone saying, I didn't know that was even a thing. Just those small little things.
Oh,
but I don't have a very big account, but it's just nice to know that I can be helpful and of value in some way.
Oh, you are. Really important. I immediately followed when I found you because I was like, yes, more representation. I mean, if I felt alone as a fat white woman, like how must other people feel alone when they aren't white? You know, like, of course we need far more representation, and people need to be able to turn to people who also look like them and feel validated and supported. Yeah. And you provide that so beautifully. Like, I work hard to share diverse images and stories, but I'm still a white woman behind this account. Yeah. And that's why I always want to amplify, you know, voices and stories like yours, because it is so incredibly important. And the resources that you're putting out into the world are needed and necessary. And thank you.
Oh, of course. No, thank you. And I'm looking forward to doing more, if I'm honest. Like, I'm really pushing myself to share more and in new ways across the Instagram account and my blog. And also, I want to be braver in doing lives and things like that. But I'm like, who's going to listen? It's going to be me gabbing on like a weirdo.
I mean, that's my whole journey to starting this work, you know, that I've been doing for a decade now, is everything I read online said all these negative things would happen to me. And then none of them did. I had a very empowering birth.
And I'm like, why is this the narrative? Why is it so negative? And I thought, well, no, who's going to care about my story? And now this is what I do for a living. So you just, your story is so important. Your story matters. Just everyone listening, your story matters too. Like all of our stories make such a difference, and you literally can change so many lives and touch so many people's lives. Like, oh my gosh, you've totally, I loved following you, and now I just am just like so touched by you even deeper by hearing your story and all that you've gone through. And it makes me want to fight harder for, you know, doing whatever I can to change, especially how Black people are treated in maternity care. And, you know, highlighting stories like yours help. And I just, but I wish things could have been so different. And I just, in the fat phobia that you had to experience on top of everything else. And what was it like being pregnant as a plus size person in London? Like even access to maternity clothes, like you said, you didn't see yourself represented. I know you're like, Jen, let's talk about something now. Like what are the happy topics? But I'm curious what that was like. Like it seems to me like if we look back at your story, like that there just wasn't space created for you to exist.
I loved when he talked about maternity clothing because it was a joke, basically. It was a joke because the limit was, the range was ridiculous. I don't even know why some places bothered. It's like you've got 12,000 items in an extra small to large or whatever, but in the size that I need, you've got 12. Then why have you bothered? What is the point? It's offensive.
Yeah.
Also, the clothes were hideous. So it was kind of like, I've not changed who I am. Just my tummy is bigger. Like, I don't want to have to, I don't know, dress like my nan.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I'm really not someone who really bothers with their clothes, but I know the colors I like and I know the cuts I like. Very simple. Nothing difficult to find, but I just could not find anything that I liked. And then, thankfully, I guess, in losing weight, I just stayed in my own clothes because I had, with the shape of my body, I've got a very large chest, and my tummy's kind of up and down, and I've got big West Indian thighs. So clothes very rarely fit perfectly on every part of my body. So I'd have dresses that, because it worked here, was too big on my tummy. Because it worked on my chest, it was too big on my tummy. But perfect for being pregnant.
Yes!
There's the room for it to go. So that's basically what I did. I just wore clothes that had been previously a bit too big because I could not find any. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to wear dungarees all the time. I was like, I'm going to be pregnant and I'm going to wear dungarees. Because that's what you do. Aww. You watch any sitcom, pregnant people wear dungarees. So that's what I wanted. Couldn't find any that I liked. But also, my friend who I mentioned with the incompetent cervix or whatever it's called is, I mean, she's a stunner. She's absolutely beautiful. She's very thin. And she was pregnant at the same time as me. So I was in this dress. I hate this dress because it's too big anyway. And it was 2 weeks before I gave birth. And she gave birth 4 weeks after me. So we were very close. And we went to dinner with my friends. And she was just in this gorgeous summer day dress type thing, looking lovely, and I'm in this huge black dress that I hate anyway.
Aww.
And I was like, oh, I hate you, maternity clothing world. Why don't you do better?
Yeah, things have definitely gotten better in the States, but I get messages from people, especially in Canada, they're like, we don't have access to the same things. And if we buy them in the States, the shipping's like $100. So
yeah,
I'm sure it's somewhat similar in the UK. Yeah. So,
it's so annoying. I'm sure if you just wanted to wear hoodies, like if you just wanted hooded sweatshirts and stuff, you'd be fine.
Yeah.
But if you want anything else or anything that is almost cut properly, like they give a crap when they made it. That's harder to find.
Yeah. How about societal-wise? You know, we deal with a lot of fat phobia here in the US, and I'm sure it's worldwide, but how did you feel just existing in a plus-size pregnant body?
I was okay, if I'm honest. I mean, I work from home and I only go out to places that I know and I'm comfortable in. So yeah, that very much helps. But also, Ramona didn't really show herself until about, I guess because of the size of my body, it's about 6.5, 7 months.
Yeah.
So I could see I was pregnant if I took my clothes off at home. But really, in my normal clothes, you couldn't really see it.
Yeah.
And obviously in work meetings across Zoom, you certainly couldn't see it. So, it wasn't until, 6.5, 7 months really that she kind of popped. And no, I think that in one way I was fortunate there. I had nothing really that I can think of. I wore my baby on board badge everywhere I went very proudly.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I love. It's one of the nicest things. So yeah, if you're pregnant and you tell the TfL, Transport for London company, they send you a free badge. So that if ever you're on public transport, everyone knows you're pregnant and has to give you a seat.
Good.
So that was quite nice.
Yes, yes.
But no, honestly, I didn't really experience anything beyond what I was already experiencing and used to, you know?
Yeah.
And really, in this country, I feel more issues or kind of friction when it comes to my race than my size. Unless I'm just more invisible to the stuff about my size, because I'm just like, oh, whatever.
Right.
And maybe the race stuff, I guess. Because when it comes to your race, it's genuinely more aggressive than if it is about your weight. Because your weight could be someone tutting at you or giving you a weird look, like, oh. You know, you might think, you know, you can get a vibe of someone. You're like, maybe I won't eat my sandwich now because they're going to be looking at me like, oh, look at that fat woman eating a sandwich type thing. But race stuff is when you're more, yeah, you have to be a bit more aware because you don't know which way it's going to go. So again, it was more just, it's just that. Because, you know, people looking at you could be thinking, oh, I bet she doesn't know who the dad is. Do you know what I mean? Like you can get a vibe of people.
Wow.
How they look at you and how they talk to you. But it's like, well, I do know who the dad is and he could beat the crap out of you. So
yes.
I'm not worried. Too bad I could beat the crap out of you, so I'm definitely not worried.
I'm so sorry that you have to walk through the world worrying about those
things. It's more now for Ramona. Like,
for your daughter.
Yeah, I had real issues as a teenager because I kind of had unresolved trauma from my childhood that came to the fore during puberty and my teen years. But a big part of that was race. But I've only really been able to put my finger on that now. At the time, it's just feeling like you don't fit. Everything about you was wrong. I was worried about my hair just being scruffy and looking awful all the time. Like all this stuff that is very much just, there was no representation at all. Mm-hmm. So it was me going, well, this is what beauty looks like. And it's literally the opposite of me.
Oh, wow.
So then who am I? Who am I and what am I? And I was only really seeing sexualized imagery of black women and fat women. Yeah. So it's like, well, then that's my worth now, according to society. So I had that kind of huge identity crisis as a black woman in this country. Especially my parents, I've mentioned, weren't born here. So I'm first generation. So they came and had awful hatred when they arrived here. So then I'm a bit like, you know, coming off of that. And then I have a daughter who's mixed race. My husband is white. So Ramona is very visibly mixed, and that is so exoticized, if that's the right word. And people very much sexualize mixed race women, especially. So I'm just really aware of that. And I find also, like, my parents, again, I adore my parents, and everything they say comes from a place of love. But there's definitely comments of, oh, don't let her eat all that. It's like, and I know that's shorthand because you don't want her to be fat like me. And it's like, and I know, again, it's coming from love. You're worried because you don't want, you're like, she's already gonna have to go through the world as a woman and mixed race, don't let her be fat too type thing. And it's kind of like, but all of that is piling it on her.
Yeah, but what you're doing is actually not helpful whatsoever. No, now you're impacting her mental health and body image too.
Yeah, before she's even left the house.
Yeah.
You know, so it's these are the things now that I worry about. It's kind of like, I guess, for me, I think as soon as she was born, I stopped worrying about myself. And maybe that's why all the stuff that happened in hospital is only now that I'm like, wait a second. That doesn't sound right.
You birthed a human and had to go through postpartum. Like, for everyone, it's a blur. So I think it's, especially for those who've been through trauma, it takes a long time to start processing through everything, even, you know, for Jack, too. And, oh, gosh. But when you feel brave and ready to tell those stories, even just what you shared about Ramona and your concerns, there are millions of people that echo those same concerns and that don't hear what is being shared and those concerns about, you know, their children being sexualized in that way because of how they feel. Yeah. Those are not conversations we're having as much that are so important.
And it's always in my mind. It's a thing I really worry about how she perceives herself because I understand that that is where that starts. Kind of how you, that strength comes from how you see yourself, and it starts now. Yeah. So before she was born, I would never do affirmations or anything like that. I was like, oh, that's all just kind of flower power stuff that has nothing to do with me. But I tried one once with her and she glowed. She just glowed because I was holding her in front of the mirror. And I said to her how beautiful she was. And she kind of like was like, oh. So I said, no, you look at yourself in the mirror and you say, I am beautiful. And she said it, but she just, this grin came across her face. So now we call them the special words. Well, myself, we do affirmations with her and Jack does affirmations with her as well. So we have her saying that she's beautiful, she's brave, she's kind, clever, and funny.
I love all of that. And you know what? She's also a warrior like her mother.
Oh, thank you. She's going to be much more fierce than me, though. I'm scared for the world. I apologize now.
I'm excited for this fierce warrior who is also kind and funny and beautiful.
She's very funny.
Well, Fiona, you've shared so much and I just wonder what is your message for that fat, black, wonderful, pregnant person? What is your message for them as they're going into pregnancy?
You are not alone and you are so worthy of everything good and you are so capable and there is so much love in you and you deserve it. Everything that you are about to give to the world, you deserve back tenfold. And if you're not receiving it right now, come talk to me because I will give it to you in spades. I will give it to you because you deserve it. It's yours. You've got this. It's going to be amazing. You're in for so much fun. And speak up. 100% speak up. It's hard. It is hard. Sometimes you go, you feel like, how are people going to hear me? Are they going to think negatively of me? But do you know what? Forget those people. Speak up. Speak up. Speak up.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Oh, tell everyone where they can find you and how they can tap in to the work that you're doing.
Okay, so primarily I am Instagram, so that's at fatblackpregnant. And I also have a blog at fatblackmother.co.uk. I'm doing sort of things, I'm writing and doing articles for other people. And we also, there's the Awareness Week for Black Maternal Mental Health.
Yes.
It has just happened, but there's another Black Maternal Health Week. There you go, Black Maternal Health Week. And so I'm one of the leaders in terms of getting content out about that and awareness. So my aim is just to really keep building on that. And the best place to see that and kind of keep up with me, I guess, is my blog. I do have plans for an audio-based project just because I have worked in audio for the last nearly 20 years. And it is something I'm massively passionate about.
Yes.
But I won't say too much on that. But yeah, keep staying tuned.
We're eager and waiting to hear more from you and to learn more from you. And I mean, your story has impacted my heart and I know it's impacting other people's lives. And I am so thankful for all that you shared
And I know you've got a warrior on your hands, and I'm excited to see how life unfolds for all of you guys, working through the trauma that you've experienced in order to heal and also empower others as well.
Thank you so much. Thank you so, so much. It's been so easy and lovely speaking with you.
Oh, well, ditto. the same. Well, friends, please check out all of Fiona's work. I'll put everything in the show notes so you can follow along. And until next time, goodbye.
Bye.